You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Night Talk.
26 minutes before 10. Welcome back to Night Talk. As mentioned earlier on in the show, yesterday was the deadline for the Department of Basic Education to ensure that the norms and standards for basic education had been implemented. And you'll remember that there were several deadlines, including some that were quite short term that came. The deadlines were yesterday, but also in the next 5, but also 10 years, relating to making our schools conducive spacings for teaching and learning. And yesterday there was already a concern that the deadline would be missed. It appears that it has been missed, which obviously has huge implications for what happens now and very immediately for students who need those norms and standards to be implemented, but that hasn't been the case. And to talk to us about those issues, we're joined by Daniel Linder, who is the Deputy Director of the Equal Education Law Center. You will remember that Equal Education lobbied for many years for the standards to actually even be prioritized. And when it was, I think it was about 3-4 years ago, they were then the deadline set. But now it appears we've missed those deadlines. Daniel, thank you very much for joining us on Night Talk this evening.
Hi, thanks.
So the minimum uniform norms and standard for public school infrastructure, very quickly, what do they specifically refer to? We know broadly it's about infrastructure and what needs to be in place for teaching and learning to happen. But what does that actually involve?
Right. So the regulations for school infrastructure adopted at the end of 2013 by the Minister for Basic Education, Angie Motshekga, she adopted them in terms of Section 5A of the South African Schools Act. What they do is they create for the first time a framework that says a school is not an adequate school nor a safe school if it doesn't have certain essential elements for both health and safety of children and for adequate teaching and learning. And that includes adequate water, electricity, proper sanitation, that the school should be built of proper structures. It also includes elements of teaching and learning and personal development, like sports fields, like science labs, like libraries. And because of the legacy of apartheid and colonialism, many of our schools attended by poor learners and black learners are without both the basic elements and the more teaching-orientated elements. So the schools, more than 90% of public schools don't have stock libraries, and there are still hundreds of schools that don't have any sanitation, any electricity, any water, and then thousands that have some form of these things, but the access is inadequate or irregular, or instead of functioning toilets, they put latrines. So the norms and standards seek to address those things through a legal framework that didn't exist before the end of 2013. Mm-hmm. And by saying that the worst off schools, the schools that are most difficult for learners to attend safely and to have a healthy learning experience, that those schools should be addressed most urgently, which, as you mentioned, was by the deadline yesterday.
Mm. So, as you mentioned, one of the things relates to the physical structures, where some of them are considered to be inappropriate because they're built from things like wood or metal or mud or asbestos, and those obviously need to be replaced, in addition to all the stuff like water and sanitation. And in terms of the schools that have, you know, physical structures that are inappropriate, do we have a sense of how many those are in the country?
Yeah, we don't, because what the department does is it publishes something called the NEIMS, the National Education Infrastructure Management Systems. It publishes it sporadically, and it tells us how many schools don't have water, don't have electricity, don't have sanitation, but without the detail to confirm those numbers. It doesn't, though, talk to how many schools are built partially or substantially from inappropriate structures, or how to differentiate between partially and substantially inappropriate structures. Mm. So we don't know exactly. We do have plans from the provinces that were released very, very late after a lot of lobbying by members of the public and members of Equal Education. And those plans do set out province by province some of the backlogs. But also plans in a province like the Eastern Cape, which probably has the worst infrastructure backlog. The plan says we don't actually know yet the status of the infrastructure backlog. We haven't completed an audit. And this was more than a year and a half into the 3-year deadline to to fix the worst of schools.
Mm.
So we don't know, but we do know that there are many, many schools built entirely of inappropriate structures, as you say, mud, metal, wood, asbestos, and many built substantially. What the law does, and one of the problems we have with the law, and it's a reason for a current challenge that's before the courts, which I can speak to more, is that the law says that by the deadline that's just been missed, 29 November 2016, schools built entirely from inappropriate structures must be fixed or must be prioritized. And one of the problems we have with that is it doesn't cater for schools that are substantially built from inappropriate structures. The minister in her court paper says, well, that's just a matter of prioritizing. And by the end of the norms time frames, which is 2030 only, schools that are built substantially from inappropriate structures will be catered for.
Mm.
The one problem with that is that the regulations don't actually say that. So there's nothing in law at the moment that says we will fix schools that where most of the classrooms are built from zinc, but there's one brick structure.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem is it arbitrarily punishes people who are often pooling scarce resources together to try to improve the lot of the community and the school. So many schools in rural provinces might be built from mud, zinc, wood, but you might have one or two blocks or classrooms or an admin block that is built from brick.
Mm-hmm.
And often it's the community that's come together and said, we have to do this for the betterment of the school and the community. And what the law does is it excludes those schools because they are not entirely inappropriate. And so even though we are so many years into a democratic dispensation, the learners at those schools are not to be prioritized for going to school in a proper structure.
Mm. Joined on the line by Deputy Director of the Equal Education Law Center, Daniel Linder. And he joins us to talk about the norms and standards, the uniform norms and standards that were certainly one of the deadlines was yesterday with regards to upgrading the infrastructure. So schools are places that are adequately equipped for teaching and learning. And we're taking your calls on 011-883-0702. You can also SMS us your thoughts on 31702 or send us your WhatsApp messages on 063-873-3032. Now, one of the things that came up yesterday, Daniel, ahead of, you know, what looked like the deadline being missed was the issues with regards to the other departments that are involved. So yes, I guess the final implementation or the ensuring that it's done sits with education. But for instance, a department like Public Works is also quite an important partner. But it appears that the buck stops with education, even though they don't have oversight over the other departments. Is that correct?
Well, the argument that we make is that the state is responsible for ensuring that that children and everyone can access a quality education, which is a constitutional right.
Mm-hmm.
The Constitution doesn't speak about which departments of state must be responsible for what. It says that the different elements of the state must cooperate and that people have certain rights. So one of the things, as I say, we are currently on behalf of Equal Education and a school in Staderheim in the Eastern Cape called Amatolovo, are challenging some of the shortfalls in the regulations that we believe the state as a whole might use as an excuse for their admitted failure
mm-hmm.
to meet the deadline and future deadlines and to plan properly. And so one of the major things that we're challenging in the court at the moment is a provision in the norms and standard regulations that says that the implementation of these norms and standards is subject to the resources and cooperation of other government agencies and entities that might be responsible for infrastructure in general.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, what this piece of law seeks to do is to say, we're going to try as the Department of Education, but if we don't fix schools within these deadlines, which we actually see more as these loose sort of targets, and as long as we've tried our part in prioritizing elements, you as learners and teachers and parents can't come to us and say, my school wasn't fixed on time, you violated your duty.
Mm-hmm.
As long as we can say, well, Treasury didn't come to the party with money, the Department of Public Works didn't come to the party. Another element that's captured by this clause that I've just explained to you, which we call the escape clause or the escape hatch, are state implementing agents. So you've got an implementing agent like Quagga in the Eastern Cape, which is contracted to build most of the to implement most of the infrastructure building projects for schools in the Eastern Cape.
Mm.
It's a state-owned entity, and to the extent that it fails to perform or demonstrates a shortfall in capacity to perform as it's contracted to, what this escape clause will allow it to do, if the escape clause is accepted, is for the department to say, well, nobody violated the law because we couldn't do it because our implementing agent didn't have the capacity. We're saying that given that the right to education is so fundamental, given that the best interest of children is so fundamental in our constitution, so we're looking at Section 28 and Section 29, given that equality in Section 9 is implicated, and the dignity and actually the safety and the life of children, that's not an acceptable limitation on constitutional rights to allow for that kind of escape clause. And so we're asking the court to actually strike it out of the regulations. But the way that the state has framed it, as I say, is to say, well, as long as the Department of Education puts a foot forward, if we can't do it, then sorry for the learners who are in that position.
And then in terms of now the missed deadlines or the ones that were relevant yesterday, set for yesterday, what then is the consequence? What happens? Is there any kind of recourse? And to what extent do provincial education departments do they get held accountable as well? What happens now?
Yeah. Yes. So the provincial education departments are as accountable as the national department. Our argument is that all the elements of states are as accountable for these rights. But there's in terms of recourse, schools would be correct to say, well, I haven't been prioritized. I haven't been told that I'm on a list. Many schools do not know, especially worst off schools in a place like the Eastern Cape, many schools do not know that they even have these rights, that this law has even been adopted. I had an engagement about a year and a half ago with the district director for education in Grahamstown, who said to me, I've never heard of this law that you're telling me about.
Wow.
So there's an element of recourse to say we must be planned and prioritized, and there's a possibility of people saying you've missed the deadline. But as I say, the department has built in fail safes and loopholes into the law that we think are unconstitutional, and that's why there's a court case underway that will hopefully be heard early next year. We're exchanging legal papers at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
To fix the gaps and the loopholes that we know that the state is relying on, because in their language about meeting the deadlines, they're saying things like, we didn't have capacity financially in terms of implementing agents, we are prioritizing rather than we are fixing. They're using that language of we are prioritizing, which is problematic language that finds its way into the regulations. So we're challenging all of that with the idea of what we call fix the norms, and then so that we can fix our schools, so that we can tighten up the law so that schools en masse can have really a tight enough framework to say it's not acceptable that comprehensive fixing hasn't happened, especially for the worst of schools. But that's a sort of a legalistic answer that a lawyer like me will give you. That doesn't mean that there isn't a wide scope for political mobilization, moral consensus around the failure, because it is a failure.
Mm-hmm.
It's another broken promise by the minister who, Equal Education in their press conference today, I think fairly called the minister of broken promises. It's another failure towards learners and communities. And then there's a lot of scope also for political mobilization around that to say, there hasn't been proper accountability, proper dissemination of information around rights and planning, and proper fixing of schools. There has been some school fixing of schools. We are seeing building happening at schools. We are seeing new schools being built in places. But as I say, the crisis in school infrastructure around essentials like water, electricity, sanitation, proper structures that were meant to have been dealt with by now is not being systemically and timelessly addressed at all.
Someone asking the question on WhatsApp in terms of what could happen now. So saying, what options do parents have? So if you're a parent and perhaps your child or you know of a school for which, you know, the upgrades haven't happened. And so saying, you know, how do parents get involved? Is there a way for them to get involved?
Yeah. Well, one thing you can do is, as of today, the Department of Basic Education published a report on the norms and standards implementation. They were more than a year late in publishing their 2015 report. In fact, we still haven't seen it because a new report was due today. So in a sense, they're on time for this one, but we've been asking them the whole year for last year's one. So they were on time with the report on how they failed to meet the deadline. But one of the things you can do is you can go and see if your school's mentioned in those reports, which are on the DBE's website. And our findings in the previous round of reports were that they were very inaccurate. They were thrown together so that the line could be used that these reports exist and these plans exist. But you would find things on the Eastern Cape school plans, like there's a school called Spicy Guacamole. There is no school called Spicy Guacamole. It's a copy paste job gone wrong. So I think that's one thing that people can do. The other thing that people can do is to contact Equal Education to say, you know, how better can we mobilize around our school? Our school hasn't been adequately dealt with. Where do you have members? Where do you have a reach? Because that movement is taking forward a campaign for both the fixing of the problems in the regulations and the fixing of the infrastructure crisis itself.
Mm. Someone asking the question on WhatsApp, why are schools in rural areas not fixed? Because in the townships like Joburg or Durban, the schools are in good form, but in the rural areas, they still need to be fixed. They have one toilet, no doors. How can a child learn through that school? So the disparity between urban centres or urban areas and rural areas is the question.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think that's a very good question. You know, often the rural areas of the worst schools, there's legacies of farm schools. I think that schools are, you know, that kind of question highlights the inequality in the schooling system. There are serious infrastructure problems, even in the more urban provinces. In the Western Cape, according to the Western Cape government, there's more than 200 schools that are built entirely inappropriately. So we shouldn't underplay that or not mobilize around that. And when it comes to the rural provinces, there is a real problem in movement. And the best example I can give you is the Eastern Cape, where a lot of the rural schools are spoken about as not being viable because of their isolation and their number of learners. What the department did, the provincial department, was it announced at the beginning of the year that it would close more than 1,900 schools of the smaller schools, and learners would be shifted to other schools. Now, that is something that actually might have to happen in order to ensure learners are all in adequate, safe, properly equipped schools.
Mm-hmm.
But that brings with it its whole own range of complications. In a province like the Eastern Cape, you've got more than 50,000 learners walking dangerous or compromising unhealthy distances to and from school every day. So this would be a huge additional load of learners who would presumably need transport to and from school, or hostels would need to be built. It takes a long-term planning and consultation approach to ensure that learners are all in the right kind of school, and that enough additional teachers are moved around and enough additional classrooms are built perhaps. But what we've seen is that only in the last 2 months or so, as this deadline has approached, has the provincial department in the Eastern Cape started to send letters to schools, which they're required to do in terms of the South African Schools Act,
mm-hmm.
to say, we are considering closing your school. Now, that timing is incredibly suspect, because when they released their first implementation plan for the school infrastructure law, they said, we know that this program we've been talking about of closing a lot of the smaller schools is inextricably linked to how we're going to fix the school infrastructure crisis. But that was all they said. They gave no more information on their systemic or systematic plan to incorporate that process into the process of making sure that schools meet the norms and standards. And this is despite the fact that for years it's been murmured that there would be a need to close a lot of the smaller schools in the province. So the process of consulting with communities and schools, closing schools, building hostels, transporting learners will take a lot longer than the time by which the department has to make sure that schools are, that learners are in the right kind of schools, which, as we've said, was already missed in terms of the most urgent deadline.
Mm.
So there are particular challenges in rural provinces that have to be catered for, including those smaller schools that perhaps it's not better to fix, but in some instances better to close if needed. But the politics of doing that are suspiciously intertwined with the politics of missing this deadline. Because, as I say, suddenly, with a few months to go, there's movement on that front.
And just a final question.
Or ostensible movement on that front.
Sorry, I cut you off there. But there are other deadlines. So the next one, there's one in 5 years' time, but because there are numerous deadlines. So what is the next one? What does it relate to?
Yeah, so the first deadline is the most urgent. If you are in a terribly conditioned school where you don't have drinking water, you don't have sanitation, you don't have electricity, or it's completely built of wood, that school shouldn't exist anymore as of yesterday, but it does. The second deadline, which is in, it's 7 years from the date of the norms being adopted, so it's 2020. It's the end of 2020. That deadline says that schools must not only have access to water or access to sanitation and electricity, but that it must be reliable and comprehensive. It can't be that some days electricity cuts out. It can't be that you've got one classroom with electricity, that you've got some water every day, but it's not enough for healthy drinking, for hygiene, for cooking. And you must have all of those things to the extent that it's needed and it meets acceptable standards. So that has to happen by 2020 if all things were on track, which we said they're not. The other thing that's within that 2020 deadline is that schools should have adequate fencing. So they should have fencing around all their perimeters of an adequate height, which I think is 1.8 meters. And that's a crucial element for a lot of schools. Because a lot of schools suffer with safety issues, with theft issues, and you see that again also generally in the more rural, isolated provinces in terms of theft when people aren't on the grounds, and also in terms of a lack of fencing that's there.
Thank you very much. That's Daniel Linda, the Deputy Director of the Equal Education Law Centre, joining us this evening. Thank you very much for your time, Daniel.
Thanks a lot for having me.